Hi folks, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carl. Welcome you to the latest podcast from the Banter team. When it comes to putting on events and festivals, the hardest issue most organisers will have to deal with has to do with funding. As part of Eventbrite's free, celebrating free events for all, photography exhibition at Teeling's Whiskey Distillery in Newmarket in Dublin, we were joined by Colin Hart, founder and creative director of independent ad agency The Public House, Sam Bishop, manager of Happenings and founder of Street Feast and Granby Park, and Anya O'Mahony, marketing and event management consultant, to talk about the ins and outs of sponsorship.
Hi folks, welcome along to the Westlife reunion. When Eventbrite were organising this, said, please don't get stools, because every time you get stools at events like this, you look like members of Westlife. So I'm not going to take that joke any further. Welcome along to Banter at Eventbrite. My name is Jim Carroll, I'm the host of Banter. Thank you very much for coming along. Thanks a million as well to Eventbrite for inviting me to do this event as part of their free exhibition here. So we need some information, first of all, about the exhibition, which is on the walls around. It's called Free, and it's a photographic celebration of free events through the ages in Ireland. Eventbrite believe that free events enrich communities, and this project is inspired by that. They've created a free events ebook to support people should they want to create their own events, and they'll send it on after the event. And if you've already RSVP'd or you want to kind of like to have another go to maybe get one of the prints on the wall, please go to freedublin.eventbrite.ie, and the withdrawal will be done once the exhibition ends. So tonight's event is basically about the ins and outs of sponsorship, and we've gathered together three sponsorship experts, three sponsorship people who've got like strong opinions on sponsorship full stop. I'm going to ask each one of the panelists to introduce themselves, starting with Anya at the very end.
Hi, Anya O'Mahony is my name, and I'm marketing and events consultant. I have worked for about 22 years now in the events industry, starting off in theatre actually, and then moved on to big festivals like St. Patrick's Festival. I've worked for Carlo Arts Festival, the Tall Ship Festival, the Oyster Festival in Galway, and those kind of a lot of large-scale public free events. I've also worked in different capacities in terms of fundraising and commercial events and so forth, and I teach event management in different colleges. So that is my background. I've had the misfortune of being in the position of procuring sponsors for events over the years, and I was saying this to Jim earlier on, I'd say it up front, that it's an area that I'm trying to extricate myself from, so happy to give advice, but not happy to work in that area anymore, so that's my background.
Excellent, thank you very much, Johnny. Sam, tell us about yourself.
Hello, I'm Sam Bishop, and while I trained originally as an architect, I currently run events, so I run an initiative called Street Feast, which is a national day of street parties. I also help coordinate Happenings, which is open air cinemas, open air music and yoga, various initiatives out in public parks. And I was also involved in an initiative called Granby Park, which is a park that was built in the north side of Dublin with a lot of volunteers by a team called Upstart. So that's where I'm coming from, that kind of thing.
Okay, great. Tell us a little bit about sponsorship as well. I mean, was Granby Park sponsored? What kind of sponsorship do you have there?
Granby Park was a wonderful balance of everything. I guess it involved huge amounts of volunteers, and then it had some funding from the local council, and then it had some sponsorship. But it was a sponsorship which wasn't where there was an agreement that they wouldn't be overly branded, and that the park was actually completely not branded at all. We actually worked hard to erase any brands that were even on a mug, so they were completely unbranded. So even though the brands were able to talk about their association with the park through their channels. So we can probably go through that a bit more.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you, Sam. Colin.
I'm Colin Hart, and I have an ad agency that I set up about 4 years ago here in Dublin called The Public House. My background was working in ad agencies internationally. I came back to get married here and set up a public house, and we would deal with a lot of sort of larger brands and people like Jemison International and Rabble Direct and just Paddy Power. They were really interesting. We'll talk about them later, because they're kind of the antithesis, the antichrist of good sponsorship. They're basically trying to destroy anybody who stories are for free. So yeah, it's, I've set that up. It's not a big agency. There's 15 of us down the road there. So hopefully I can help and tell you something that's interesting.
Okay, cool. Well, I suppose I'm going to start with you, Anya. You know, as someone who's kind of been worked on big events and has worked on kind of like, you know, worked with events which have kind of like needed sponsors as well to get off the ground. Have you noticed a big change in terms of what sponsors want and what sponsors are looking for when events approach them, when they decide, okay, we're going to sponsor that event?
Yeah, well, certainly over the last, really, I suppose we saw the shift from the late 90s towards the, when we got into the session, things changed considerably. Like initially, when I worked on St. Patrick's Festival in the late 90s, it was possible to go to big corporates and just tap them for 10 grand. They had that some money in their corporate fair budget. And all they were looking for in return was a logo placement and corporate hospitality. And it was, you know, there wasn't much in terms of return on investment, there wasn't much focus on really squeezing kids out of that sponsorship agreement. Whereas now it's all about building relationships, about building brand loyalty, about driving brand favourability, and ultimately about driving sales. It's a lot more commercially focused, and the sponsors really want to see a return on the investment, so which puts pressure on the event managers, and rightly so, to really display what's in it for the brand. But at the same time, you have to look after your own property, so you have to be what I used to call the custodian of your own brand and not dilute your own brand.
Have you also noticed as well, Anya, that, like, you know, that sponsors looking for things from the events that in years gone by they never think about? People like, I mean, looking for special content and looking for, like, I mean, like a lot of things which aren't just kind of putting the poster up, putting their name behind it.
Yeah, I mean, the logo placement and all that in the poster, that's taken as given. It's all about activation and engagement and being present and having that opportunity, because the unique thing about events is that it gives you the chance to be face to face with your customers, with your prospective customers. So they want to actually make use of that opportunity and activate your sponsorship on the ground, both in advance of the event and at the event. And also online, and to extend the reach of that sponsorship and the potential to reach a wider audience through social media. So an example of that would be, say, for instance, Electric Picnic had an area that was sponsored by Electric Ireland. And they did a really good brand activation where they had an adult playground, and the whole idea was to communicate the message of energy conservation and everything. So they had people playing on these giant machines to generate electricity, and they had the pedal power initiative and showers generated by people pedaling at the event. Or you'd have a much more deliberate focus on driving customers to your, say for instance, Superkin sponsored Taste of Dublin, and they gave out vouchers after Taste of Dublin. It wasn't good enough just to be there and have branding and have your logo placement and be part of the marketing campaign and have the publicity. They wanted to see the football in stores after the event. So this is something to think about for yourselves. And it's also something that isn't interfering with your event. Is they give out discounts vouchers to people at their stand, and then we're able to monitor that they were driving the sales to the store after the event. Then other things, you know, yeah, an awful lot of brands looking for a lot of authentic type of engagement, in the sense of not necessarily all about quantity, they also want to build a really genuine relationship with their customers. So with Tall Chips, for instance, Lidl were a major sponsor that I brought on board. They sponsored the volunteer program for Tall Chips. And Tall Chips is a very big public event with 1,000 volunteers recruited for it. So initially, you think Lidl were a retail company and that they'd be looking to sell products at events and the opportunity for pop-up stores. But what the benefit for them, and to get inside their head and see what their strategy is, they were all about positioning themselves as a friendly discount store. So their proposition position was, you know, 100% friendly, 100% service focused. So they wanted to be the face of the festival, the friendly face of the festival, and be there in a better way than to be the sponsor for the volunteers who were doing things like giving a map how to navigate the area, helping mummies on board the ships with their kids and all the rest. But they went a step further and they wanted to really get maximise the opportunity within volunteers themselves, 1,000 people, and run the social media campaign to build goodwill and generate loyalty amongst that target audience specifically. And then they had an awards programme, something that we worked with, and they sort of had a concept of what they wanted, but they weren't quite sure. And we came up with this idea of having an awards programme so that a ceremony to be sponsored after the event, and then got to present, you know, volunteer in different sectors and different prize of little holiday outfits and you know, piece of crystal, whatever. And it was a small thing, it wasn't a big spend for them, but to them it meant a lot, because there was an extra 1,000 people, and the goodwill effect of sharing that story amongst their networks was very significant to them, in addition to the million people on the ground who came to talk to and saw the friendly face, the little sponsor on the field. So that's the kind of thing, they're being a lot more savvy, a lot more
they want more bank for the buck, basically.
They want more bank for the buck, but they also, I think it's a good change, because they're not just seeing it as an alternative to a billboard ads. You know, it's much more well thought out and making the right fit with the event.
Are you seeing the same thing, Sam, like when it comes to the events you do, when it comes to happenings, when it comes to things like street fees, when it comes to the Granby Park? I mean, are sponsors a lot more kind of like being savvy and aware, or do you kind of find sometimes that when they're approaching you, I mean, you know, when you spoke there about like the brand looking for authenticity, you know, I would think about all the events you've been involved in, as well as a real bang of authenticity from them. So, I mean, are you beating up sponsors with a big stick then?
Not so much. I think it's, you've got to remember that. Yes, the reason why they're if you are being asked by sponsorship, and I guess the reason why people are looking for you or looking to sponsor your event is because they like what you're doing, and they also like the authenticity of your event, and that you've kind of stuck to a something really, really tight, really special, and that's what we try and do with our events. And that's where I kind of take Chloe and Anya. Like, for me, that's something that I would struggle with. Like, how much do you need to hold on to the kind of the line that you're going with your event, and how much are you willing to, let's say, give? Because actually, when you work with a sponsor, that, like, ideally, when you work with a sponsor, you're going to actually raise it to another level, to both the sponsor and the event, and the ultimate vision. Often that can get mired in, well, we were once on this way, and we need to get this, we need to get to on the top line of the possible. That kind of stuff can then kind of drag you down, and it can kind of drain you as well.
Yeah.
And that's where I have a lot more time for brands who are willing to be a bit more creative and understand that experience, the experiential part, rather than, let's say, need to get my logo in there.
I mean, I still think, like, I want to bring you in here, Colin, because, I mean, like, you know, you're someone who, like, you're the person who kind of, I suppose, deals with the sponsors face on, you know, and you will know exactly what they're looking for. You've heard from kind of all your family, like, event organizers, like, you know, how they view sponsorship and what they see as kind of important. I mean, sponsors might view what they look for.
I suppose, like, there's sponsorship and everything is everywhere, but there's good sponsorship and maybe different sponsorship, in my opinion. You know, like your examples of, you know, people go to like a picnic because they love music. It's not because they love, you know, vouchers from Super Queens or Super Value. So they're going there, and it's like good brands. You know, we work with some really interesting brands, and they get that. They get the behavior of how people really sort of why they're going to these events, and, you know, whether that's a huge event like a picnic or just an evening. You know, they're going there because there's a cultural reason why. You know, there's a real behavioral reason why they want to do it. So good sponsorship is where that actually meets really nicely. And it's not just, I mean, there's two schools of thought about, you know, organizing an event. You can organize an event because
see that a mile off, and you know, brands can see that as well. It's not, you know, it's pretty common sense. And so, you know, people who genuinely want to, are passionate about something, will probably, that's just my opinion, and I think they'll find a much easier way to get somebody, you know, aligned with a brand, aligned with it. And you know, you don't need to, it's not rocket science to find, you know, five brands with a really good event like whiskey or something like, you know what I mean, or film or music or whatever that might be. So I think it's just about really understanding at the initial outset of your event what kind of sponsorship person would be, or brand would be the right person to work with you. And then just approaching those people, and you know, this is such a great country for it because it's so small. You literally have you can talk to anybody at any time and, you know, go and approach them. I mean, I know some people say they just talk to any of these guys, but everybody knows somebody, and LinkedIn help us do that even better. And Eventbrite have helped people put on these kind of events very, very simply. So the housekeeping part's actually quite easy. It's just about, you know, getting that cultural fit, and that's where the really interesting events are coming out, in my opinion.
I'm curious as well, like, you know, I'm aware there's a lot of people in the audience who are event organisers and maybe will be looking for sponsors. So, like, let's talk about that initial approach. I mean, you gave me an example earlier on, like, of somewhere like a cold call touch, like someone who's out of the blue got in touch about an event and, like, the sponsor was really delicious. So, is that something all of you have kind of found, that, like, in the cold calling, the pitches out of the blue actually work?
Yeah, I mean, here it does, yeah, I think it can easily do that. I mean, the only thing I can say about that is that you can contact pretty much any marketing manager, but it's the ammunition that you're giving them to sell that in. You've got to understand how difficult their jobs are. I mean, there's so much politics. I'm sure there's some people here who are, you know, marketing executives. Imagine, like, you know, how difficult it is. They have to have ammunition to sell this to their boss. It's not just about them making a decision. Their decisions are probably made like 12 months in advance, or 18 months in some cases. So, you know, you come to them 2 weeks prior to an event going, I think that, you know, you guys get a great sponsor of this event. It's probably just not going to work. So, you giving them the information that they need to sell that in will probably help them. So you can contact them, email them, you can send them through your deck, but, you know, you're going to have to show them lots and lots of stuff to help them, you know, have that ammunition to go and sell that in internally for their bosses.
Yeah.
Financial streams, and it's not easy for them. You know, it's pretty complicated within big companies, and everybody wants to be, you know, have some kind of big brand sponsoring an event to actually get their credibility, to probably sell more tickets. And there's all sorts of
Thing gives such credibility as well as money.
Yeah.
I mean, money to go on the event, but also, like, I'm curious as well, like, me and Sam, like, when it comes to sponsors coming to you, you've got a sheet of paper there from Granby Park, and you've got a list of sponsors who worked on Granby Park, and, like, what they get. Did you find that people were approaching you because of your experience, because they knew you from elsewhere? What was the case of, it was like, okay, Sam's been involved in other events, like, he hasn't made a complete mess, he hasn't taken money and ran off to Panama, you know, he can get sure so on the event.
No, look, I when I first started doing events, I tried that cold calling and pitching, and I actually didn't get much luck. And I found that personally, it's ended up unfortunately being just getting to know the person you need to know and getting a conversation with them. But like, it hasn't been intentional. It's almost like it's been luck. Ended up being that the conversation that I've actually garnered some actually good relationships. With Freezies, we built relationships with Mentra for one of the years. They basically had an idea, and then they realized that Freezies were doing that, and they said, can you try this? And so we went on that route. So that was kind of from their agency and pushed us. And then once that happened, then brought in the various other agencies, including the ad agency, as well as the PR. But like for Granby Park, it was a matter of just trying to. I think they have this sheet that actually Aaron over there somewhere put together when we were kind of. Basically, this is a park that we built on Parnell Street. I don't know if anyone may belong there, but. It was the vision was to turn a derelict site into and a kind of a private site into a public space for art and creativity for the summer. And to do that, we needed some money. We needed to, vision was that it was going to be volunteer-run projects, but we needed to get money to pay for materials, to pay for the security, and the things that were going to be required by the council or by the guards. So we ended up doing it a little bit like the way the Eden project was put together, where you almost kind of luff your way through to getting relationships and getting kind of partnerships. So we basically built this kind of presentation of who the various partners were, and it's a pretty simple thing. You basically tell someone else who your friends are, and you just keep on adding those people on board, and then people go, "Oh, I'm part of that group." And that kind of happened. So we, while doing that, we also had to gain trust with all those groups, but also with the council. And then once that happened, we were able to we went down the fundraising route. And so that meant there was kind of, let's say, public fundraising, but there was also some brands who were willing, or some agencies who were willing to give some money to it. But it was more because they believed in it, and they didn't really, they were going to get their name on it, but it was only on the kind of the thank you board. Because we were very honest at the very start that this was going to be a non-brand thing.
I'm curious about that whole thing you were kind of saying there, but like once you had that list of people together, the other people came on board. But what you were looking for, some of people, wasn't money.
Exactly. You've got to figure out what first of all what you need ultimately, where you're going, what you need to get to make that happen. But there's also the other partners come on board and give you other things. So it might not just be money. So for this year, for Street Feast, for me, it's been to maintain the integrity of Street Feast. It's about coming from the ground up. Street Feast is a day of street parties. It's, my goal is 1,000 street parties in the streets in Saskatoon. But to get all the different partners in place so that they spread the word about it, that's basically your kind of promotional, that's a lot of your promotional and sort out. Then getting a promotional partner, after that, it's been about trying to find a sponsor to kind of especially pay to that, people can actually get paid. And that's, I still struggle with that. I haven't kind of passed it off. We're on this problem.
I'm curious about that as well, because it's something you said earlier on, Sam. I want to ask this question wrong you, which you were kind of saying is sometimes, the effort isn't worth it. You were talking about how onerous it was sometimes to get sponsors on board. Maybe only talk a little bit about the process from a big event like St. Patrick's Festival or the Baldwin Ocean Race. Is there one person who's dedicated to bringing in sponsorship, managing those relationships, and how long out are they working?
Oh, long lead time.
What's a long lead time?
Well,
So some people in the room, 2 weeks might be a long lead time.
Well, I wouldn't consider sending somebody out or going out myself, anywhere. If it's gone past a 3 month threshold, I forget about it. And even with that, if it's anything over $5,000, you want to be talking to them 9 months at least, preferably a year, because you're talking about getting them into their budgets. And a lot of brands will be preparing their budgets in the summer for the year. It could be a year ahead, it could be 18 months ahead. They could be looking at, it's certainly, well in advance of, if your event is in April of next year, of 2017, you should be talking to them in January 2016. We can plant the seed and start pitching to them and, like Colin was referring to, the politics and the time that it takes to get people to buy into the concept. But I also find, saying that the practicalities of it, it's a very time-consuming process to actually get past the gatekeeper. If you're looking for independent events, I've done the very big, and you're looking for large amounts of money, so you're tapping the likes of Hyundai and Toyota and Lidl, and they've gone by the bank, they don't want to talk to them more or less of the time. It's not easy to get to talk to the marketing director. They will have their marketing executives take your call, and eventually get the news that it's not priority for them. There are ways of getting around that, and you know, a lot of the time, if you have an idea, you still get down to 5 or 10 companies on the pitch list. It's worth thinking laterally and thinking of giving you a way that you can get their attention. Because for Paul Chip, for instance, we landed one really big sponsor for this educational initiative that was going on for 12 months in the lead up. So this was the selling side that was going on 14 months in advance. And I had prepared a huge big document which we needed to stop back and look at it. Like, this is just notes that the, you know, hours of work on it, but it's a ton more from the. See all these pages. So instead of that, we did this mailer, because it was all about Bob Ocean issues, the, you know, sailing way. So did a DL mailer with an opportunity method, essentially an opportunity, not KNOT, to be missed, and got some of these to stick on the twine in the shape of a multiple knot. We sent that out to 10 companies on hit list, and the difference in response in terms of follow-up phone calls from that to all the other times where you ring, literally if you ring somebody, you have to know if you ring for 10, 12 occasions and get nowhere.
So it's a case of imagination and tailoring your message to, like, being, to
well,
the
tailoring
audience.
Is imperative, yeah. There's no point doing it here, sir, and let you know, change the logo to their document. You have to look at their marketing strategy, look at their advertising, look at, you know, do as much research, get inside their heads and tailor it for them, and always think what's in it for them, what are they going to be looking for. And try and, if you have a personal contact or you have somebody who's in the company, even if they're not the decision maker, try and get inside their head and find out what they're about. And what also, the thing is, you don't know necessarily, you might be looking at what their strategy is now or what their, how they're positioning themselves, but they could be taking a turn in the future, because it's good to have that inside knowledge if you can.
And like, you know, from the sponsor's point of view, Colin, you were telling me about Rabobank Bank earlier on, you know, and like, you know, how they've changed. Because, I mean, only said, like, you know, the banks have kind of moved away from sponsorship, but you've kind of seen an example, like, where they're actually, they reacted really well to a pitch.
Yeah, I mean, they've been sponsoring for 12 for years and years, and I think they should have, but anyway, it wasn't really working for them, so they decided...
Sorry for that, Colin.
I mean, it was actually really interesting because, you know, for economics and for Penny, it was, you know, rather a ton of voice and communications, you know, really good fun, so I think that kind of thing. So, you know, finance and which economics comes along, and then, well, every other bank should be jumping that one, and giving them that head start, but, you know, it's a smart, very smart move, great sponsorship. So, but then the other side of that was quite interesting because, you know, we talk about why, you know, the reality for most events are that they make a massive loss in the first couple of rounds. So they're, you know, running an event, make no money on it, but they calculate the information they've got, and, you know, it's really precious, you know, the kind of the seeding, the influence, the social media, all the various things that, you know, people have got from it. The, you know, right down to the very details of, like, you know, like what size the microphones are, that you could put your logo on there, or something like that. They're getting really intricate about it. And,
so you know, it shows a sponsor the actual event is done as homework.
Yeah, exactly. You look incredibly professional, and anything, you know, professional is premium, and premium is extra value, so it costs a little bit more. So I suppose, you know, put an event on, you know, make a bit of a loss. I'm sure it was the same, you know, you probably started out and you weren't getting sponsorship and it didn't happen, and it sort of suddenly people started to see what you were up to, it got a bit of momentum, people were talking about it, some marketing director came by and had a go at some yoga in the park or something like that and decided, you know what, this is it's great, I'd like to be part of it. Or, well, you know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Like some of the things we still haven't done that sponsorship in comparison. And we're still learning it, so we're testing the waters. But there are, like, so for another love story, this is Castle, which we've run now for 2 years, this is the third year. And that this year we will be exploring with one brand how we can kind of give them a bit of space, we can maybe take some more hours, and that's kind of that's where we see a benefit. We have to go that way, otherwise it's not.
Is this something
you know, somebody said as well, like, you know, for having events which aren't sponsored, you know, it makes it much more valuable to, like, you know, the punters. It makes it, and also from a sponsor's point of view, something is not sponsored, say you put something that's unsponsored and it's getting an awful lot of traction, it's getting an awful lot of attention, does that make it more valuable and more attractive to a sponsor?
Well, I think from a happening point of view, it'll always try and have the 5 years in entry fee, or even free fee, because that's like the honest, the kind of the original where that came from. It's trying to understand as an event, okay, we're not like to say, if it happens, doesn't just do, let's say, produce events, or it doesn't just, sometimes it will just go and produce an event for a brand, or it'll just do a happening event. But it's trying to understand, well, that's that kind of package that we have to give to the public, and this one here is that we can actually work with the public and also a brand. And then there's others that are just about, like, producing something for a brand, a bit like an event, a normal event company.
Yeah.
And it's trying to understand what the different packages you're providing, and kind of that, and then it's going, okay, so we've got that package, and that one there is going to be one of the top.
I mean, Colin, you said something earlier on, you were kind of saying that, like, when the event is starting off, there could be five different brands they could kind of pitch to, you know? So, I mean, in many ways, it's a buyer's market, a brand can decide, you know? So I'm curious, like, is there ever a situation you come across where basically brands want to get involved in the event, really, really want to get involved in the event, and the event is kind of dropping off, it's like, oh, we don't need you, can we go with someone else? Just like, you know, the balance seems to be, like, being very much in the sponsor's quarter.
Well, it is actually, it's an interesting one because, you know, instead of people are putting on these events because they need a sponsor community to get some money, this kind of thing. So people who take money out of it are, you know, they're not getting a sponsor, which is quite an interesting one because there's a few events now, which I think is a great idea. You kickstart the event. You literally go to Kickstarter and Eventbrite with a good idea for an event, and put, you know, Kickstarters with sales. So suddenly you're just taking money out, and you know that those certain people are going to be there and they've covered your cost. So sponsorship is basically a bonus. So you can take time and you can choose. So basically you're in that controlling seat to go, I would like these three brands to pitch to me in theory. So I suppose the other side of that is brands will pitch to you if your idea is absolutely brilliant. So, you know, they really, really want to get involved with that. Like, I can imagine there's a number of events, but I think it will be like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I haven't been involved in any specific things like that. But I like that idea of taking the finance part out of it, knowing that you're able to put on an event, knowing that it's covered from a financial point of view, which means you can really go for the pure awesomeness of whatever that event might be. Mm. And by doing that, and the passion and all the kind of things you put into that, and knowing that it's covered from a financial point of view, will make that event something that brands will love to be a part of because you're not compromising in any way. And that's kind of, you know, really interesting. And then the other side of brands pitching to brands or brands pitching to you is, you know, you choosing the brand is going to allow you, to facilitate you to do the things that you've set out to do really well without any compromise. That's quite interesting because I've seen a few times where, you know, brands get involved and they spend some money on something and suddenly they basically don't control it. And in fairness, there should be an element of that. I'm sure you guys are aware of that as well, and for everybody's aware of that's happening. So I think that's quite an interesting one to choose the specific brands that you know, like you have a relationship with, and you're interviewing the people that you want to pitch to, if that makes sense.
So, yeah.
It's kind of frustrating because you're trying to almost convince them, you're trying to remind that brand, you kind of wanted us the way we were, didn't you? And they're kind of going, no, but we want to do it anyway. And so, as you say, it's they've come to you because they really like this, but they also want the people that are coming to your event. So,
yeah.
And if that negotiation can be pretty early on, and needs to be clear on the
direction. It's good for you because you've got like event organizing swagger. You can just walk into the room with basically a, you know, you've got huge credibility, so that's quite interesting because your momentum has actually sort of got up to a certain point that, you know, brands do want to be involved in you because you've done a really good job and so it's kind of, I suppose it's totally different for people who are starting. Like, you don't have that credibility or the sort of the swagger goes with it, and that sort of, like, yeah, I think there's a tell somebody, the more submissive you become, and so it's really difficult, and then suddenly you get views.
But the other thing that kind of struck me is if Sam's events can provide integrity and kind of authenticity and there's a certain audience you'd be attracted, and that's what people want. The other thing that fans want as well on you is scale. They want a lot of people as well. So did you find on terms of some events that if you could offer brand scale, that they were prepared to kind of give you a lot of leeway? In terms of exposure to big audiences, were they a lot more forgiving of things, a lot more not looking for as much.
Yeah, they wouldn't be looking to influence the content of the event as much because the main asset is exposure to the huge audience. I find out viewers and viewers on the thing to make it clear from the outset what the boundaries were and putting parameters around what they could do and what they couldn't do. Because it's kind of the case of discrimination, take a while, and particularly marketing executives, they just want to see their logo everywhere, so you have to kind of make that very clear from the outset that there's a certain amount of real estate to put at the event. But by literally being very specific about the amount of space they have in terms of size, because we were often dealing with a number of brands in the same space, so something like Big Day Out and Parkinson Topics Festival, where you had Denny was sponsored one big section, and then you had a multitude of other smaller sponsors. So you couldn't, there was clutter on the ground, literally, so you had to work out, the actual layout of the site in terms of how much branding you should have got, so how much signage you got on site, and then in advance, they got it was relative to the investment that they made. So the yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. We basically get down to the main title sponsor would be included in of press material and social media, and then the scales of the model of sponsorship where some people would use a gold, silver, bronze type of model, but they would be given an inventory of what they get for the money. And obviously it wouldn't be the same all the time. You'd tailor that in negotiations, and you'd always find a sort of special feature that would appeal to that brand. So that would kind of be the icing on the cake. And something I learned over the years was just be really careful to manage expectations. Don't promise something that you can't deliver. And if anything, hold something back and give it a little extra because they think it's fantastic. And document everything. Make sure you tell them how wonderful everything is, because they tend to turn up at events for maybe an hour and they'll spot everything that has possibly not measured up to the expectations if the sign was looking a little bit messy or something like that. So to get people assigned to taking photographs and getting lots of smiley happy people eating their sausages and with the sign in the background and lots of...
Give us an example of what you mean there by giving something tailored to the sponsor. Are we talking about pouring rice for a drinks company? Is it that sort of thing?
Yeah, or the Denny one, for instance, they're all about, Denny had a big brand, but they had a bigger market share in Munster, and they wanted to grow the market share in the Leinster region, in Dublin in particular. So they had been a small part of Big Day for a couple of years, and we went to them and said, well, what about we carve out a special area for you and make it the, you become the type of sponsor of the event, and you have your own... we do a big Denny breakfast, and so we were going to create a whole space for them and team it, and it was a jungle team and had all fun game stuff for the kids, so people came early with their families, and they got free sausage for, well, it was, breakfast rolls type of thing. So they paid for all the activation in terms of catering, etc., but we programmed it for them and made it very much an authentic thing, and they got the benefit of goodwill and the opportunity to sample, because they're you know, it costs them a lot of money to sample in supermarkets, etc. So to have access to 10,000 people in that kind of environment where they're all celebrating and holidays and all the rest is a really, really great add-on to them. And for us, it's mutually beneficial because we've got extra content that they pay for. It was a very successful issue. The pouring rights was kind of, sometimes we've dealt with James Sponsor, but to my knowledge, it's a certain standard procedure. And, you know, like the likes of Red Bull that you were mentioning earlier, I mean, they would be very, I suppose, like that savvy, like the way they do it. They make it, create a whole vibe around their presence at events, and it's really connecting with the audience. They know how to make it.
This question for all three of you. I mean, we've mentioned various areas here. We mentioned banks, we mentioned drink companies, food companies, car companies, you know, I think we might mention telecommunications companies. Are there any sectors which haven't been tapped in your opinion for sponsorship? Are there any kind of the sectors or brands that surprise you that they haven't been involved in sponsorship?
I think every sector is lacking good sponsorship, if I were to be honest. I don't think there's a lot of really good opportunities in pretty much every area in the Irish context. I mean, if you look into the States, you know, some terrible sponsorship over there, but some really interesting stuff going on there. Like, if you look at, MailChimp at the minute are pretty much sponsoring everything that's super cool in the States, Creative Mornings and Swiss News, which have massive influence. And, pretty much every cool podcast that's going on is either MailChimp or with me, Undies, the brand new Undies. They're amazing as well, so you sort of they're going really stealth at it. So that's kind of from they know that they're really connecting with their brand, so they use these guys, which is probably really good value as well for them from a marketing, from a budget point of view. But then the other sector over there, which is amazing, is the not-for-profit sector, because they are killing it with how they set up their sponsorship activities. You talk about tier systems and stuff, but they have it sorted with, Super Celebs coming along, they're going to treat you like this and all sorts of crazy things for, obviously megabucks, but at the same time it's really, really sophisticated. So, I think we need to be looking into other markets to look for, what's the best practice, because I don't think the best practice here at all, just sort of going, but we in theory could have the best influence. You could pretty much connect with everybody in this country with more than 5,000 followers on Instagram, like really easily. So, brands aren't getting really good opportunities to do that.
Is it the case that brands aren't getting too good, or is it the case that brands, and especially the brand managers, are very conservative?
Well, I guess,
I find most brand managers in Ireland don't have a clue. They're very conservative, they accept what's given to them, and you said earlier on, I think, only you're talking about, the marketing director called me off the marketing executive. That's just classic no. But sometimes, the Irish brand managers aren't prepared to do the legwork or investigate stuff more. You can't answer that question.
Well, I don't know, because I don't work with them. But, there is obviously in any market, there's going to be, a breadth of people who won't be, they'll be quite conservative, and some of them are going to be up for it. But I'm guessing anybody sitting here tonight wants those people, they're the top 20% of the marketeers, and want to try something really innovative and interesting. So, within that, and that's also selling. You need to sell that to them, try and persuade them to do that. And, quite easily, you can do that based on evidence, and evidence. I can get you as much exposure, or I've tested this item, which is going to work. So I just think it is a little bit about diligence, sales, and the ideas, and actually pretty much connect anybody. And obviously,
I think there's an element as well of some brand managers being a little bit afraid of events because they're unpredictable. So if you have a choice of spending your money on a digital campaign or, conventional advertising where you've got the stats there of who's listening and who saw and when the eyeballs saw your outdoor advertising versus sponsoring an event where, especially in the free event sort of space where you're not sure how many people are going to turn up and, if it's an outdoor event and it's subject to weather, they're nervous. It's all because it's all about return on investment and just find their own decisions, they can be reluctant to take the chance. So it does make it a little bit trickier. You need to kind of think of ways of putting in their mind that they even sit up to the track records, and you've got that reputation that Sam has there. And you know, I think what you're doing is brilliant, because you've got so much goodwill associated with what you're doing. People want to be part of that field of factor. You know, it's not just what's in it for them, it's also how it reflects on their brand and how people feel about the brand because they're sharing the space with you. And I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying, right? That, you know, you show who your supporters are, who's behind you, and then they can confidence that the piece of cancer are supporting you, or the buttons of the bed, whatever. That means, you know, you obviously can trust it with the, you know, the big bones.
I want to go back to some of the comments you mentioned that you mentioned passing about, like, you know, the American model, and you kind of mentioned about social media, and you kind of, like, the way, you know, that you know, so that someone's going to tweet out, they're going to be millions of followers. Have all of you kind of found that kind of sponsors are not a lot more savvy these days, appreciate about, like, that social media side? Is it something that's been stressed when you sit down and talk to a sponsor? Is it something you're stressing yourself?
I find that, once you get to sit down and chat with them, it is definitely a challenge, because again, I need to sit down. But once there is kind of some kind of relationship there, you have the opportunity then to have get creative and kind of really suggest new ideas. And you often find when you suggest new ideas or just other ways that it might work, and you kind of steer them away from the traditional. But, like, they're actually quite keen on that. But they just have they need to see that it's going to work, or that they do kind of understand what the problem is. But so there's a certain amount of risk that they're willing to take up.
You answered the last question, but, like, the current question about like that social media side. I mean, is some column that you're kind of seeing from potential sponsors and potential partners at the public house?
Definitely. I mean, it's a past that is reached, and there is reach. And I mean, obviously, that is the reason why they're taking money to be able to get to certain amount of people, which obviously is common sense. But actually, I mean, you might as well actively three ways to get to a marketing director that is white and not stocking. So you would basically, you know, most brands will have their sites into creative agencies, which is one of the publishers, and media agencies, which can be, you know, a much bigger part of their budget, but then that's when they're buying the space. And then there's obviously just directly through to a friend or somebody who are talking to market directly. But your media company could be like Mindshare, MediaVest, I think they're watching, but they're, you know, very specific media companies. So if you go to them, if you go to media companies, but hey, here's my proposal, which is like on Instagram, 20,000 people, on Facebook, you know, 80,000 people, you know, followers. Like, I mean, you actually need to be as abrupt as writing down exactly what your estimate earning is. It can be ambitious, but you're going to need to explain why that's ambitious. So if that's just a reach-based thing, and you know you're going to get a lot of exposure, and I'm going to go to a media company with it, if your idea is brilliant and it's never been done before, I'd maybe consider going to a creative agency and go, I think it's awesome, like, get, like, a partner with you guys, you go to the brand, and you go to any of their websites, and every ad agency will post, like, how great they are, and all the big brands they got, so you magically find out they work with this brand, so contact them, find out, you know, if your idea is great. If you, for example, you know, yoga, you know,
That leads to another question, though. You know, I mean, like, you know, these creative agencies, you mentioned something earlier on, Sam, because you were talking about, like, when you were kind of starting the street piece, first of all, you were approached by some agency who had the same idea, but instead of kind of, like, I mean, them kind of, like, knocking off down the road and knocking off your idea, they partnered with you, you know. Is this more and more common? I mean, are we seeing, like, you know, creative agencies, like, coming up with their own event, then trying to kind of pass them off as authentic?
Last year,
if a brand starts that initiative, it might not have enough integrity to get it into the point of that level. Like, how do you get that to do from a point of view, let's say, going from it, it's obviously really great and figuring out how you can support that. And I think that's where brands can really kind of gain. They're able to say, we love the idea too, and we'd love to see this like increase.
I want to kind of come to the second part of kind of like the pitch and pitch, which is like one was getting sponsorship, we talked about that, the other is keeping sponsorship, you know. Talk a little bit only about like, you know, sort of the post-event kind of post-mortem, the post-event post-mortem, and like, I mean, what's the checklist in both sides like? What are both sides looking for? And how do both sides decide they want to take the mission forward?
Well, that starts even beforehand, isn't it? Right, in terms of retaining your sponsors, because it takes so much effort to get them in the first place, it's really important to work that relationship throughout. Because you're nearly like an extension of the marketing department, you're kind of the events department for them. And so to build that relationship, get to know them well, and keep them in the loop the whole time. Don't have multiple people approaching them, you know, you don't have your production manager looking to talk to them about the event side of things. And digital person, one liaison person who's going to channel all the queries and relay all the information, whatever. Then at the event, like that, making sure you've got everything, you're covering, you're delivering everything that you promised, and then that little bit extra, the icing on the cake, that you're documenting and putting everything into an evaluation package, remembering it's all about return on investment. So if you can assess everything that you have delivered for them in terms of, it's easy to monitor online stuff, but also gather together all of your media coverage and do a you know, present them with a pack afterwards and show them what they've got, and lots of photographs and video content, etc. And that helps them to sell it internally to get the go ahead to do it again. An important thing is to, I think, get them to make sure they're at the event, they see it, and you love them, and then beforehand and at the event, and you give them as much attention as such so that they can really experience it in a good way. But it's also to get them strike while the fire is hot, so insofar as get them in quite soon after, try and get to see them within about 4 or 5 weeks of the event while it's still fresh in your mind, and you can kind of, you know, hopefully everything's gone well, and you can build on that positive sentiment and get them to agree to it again, because, you know, 2 months down the line, you might have moved on to something bigger and better in their minds when you've lost them. Most brands will look at it for, as a 3-year investment, at least. You know, it's not really worth a while trying to mess. And from your point of view, it's much more beneficial to have that kind of longer term view and to be looking at building with them over the years.
Mm-hmm. Sam, do you want to add that in terms of like from the event organizer's point of view?
Just that the person who is the event manager really needs to basically, if you have that liaison person from you as the event organizer, sponsor from the event, the person who is coordinating also just needs to know everyone, and they need to, or they at least need to know this is the person who's all those key things, they don't get communicated right in terms of what they feel those drops and break relationships, like with anything. So it's when you're sitting down and meeting these guys or any brand or a sponsor, like you're just human and chatting and trying to both kind of do your work, do your job. So, and it's the same when you're off. We both want to see these events as a success, but that just means that the person who is kind of event manager needs to know the world needs to go.
And actually that just kind of raises an issue that there's a lot of, you know, work on the part of the liaison person to get everybody internally on board, because in a way they don't really care whether that bit of signage goes up or that, you know, it's not their priority, and so we have to make sure everybody's got an eye to delivering to the sponsor as well, because it will determine the future of the event.
Again, calling from the sponsor's point of view, one of the first times that event owners should notice that the sponsor wants to get out of the relationship. It's like, you know, the 3 years is all you talk about. There's no way. After 1 year, they want to get out.
They want to get out? Well, sorry, just a follow-up. I actually, you've been talking about people, but I haven't talked about something where marketeers, when you have a marketeer, we just need to talk absolute rubbish and just, like, name something. And actually, I would suggest that people would nearly embrace that, because you need to sort of speak in marketing language. And actually, it's an interesting thing that you talk about. They call it a full-time model, so that's a big phrase in marketing speak. But, and it's like, you know, the left-hand side is your full-time, that's the medium to your event. So that's your building up awareness, you know, tweet stuff like that, talk about getting those annotations in with their avatar and their logo and some screen and a bikini, all that great stuff. And so then your event itself is like, you know, the center part. Then, you know, the next part of it is a really important part for marketers, actually. So, you know, they're looking for reach, they're looking for sharing, they're looking for user continued download. Simple things like just make an amazing video and get out there, like, you know, electric picnic can sit there on, you know, 2 million views in a video for the next 3 weeks after, and people still talking about it. And that's the kind of animation you need to go in and talk in that kind of language with those kind of assets that they know that they're going to get. And then, you know, within that next part of your bonus eye, you've got yourself go and get the PO for the next year, go in and actually, like, be as aggressive about that, because, you know, you're on your momentum there, it's been a really good event, everything's happening, you know, talk to people and go, right, you know, and yeah, that's your right, talk to people, like, a lot of people, but if it's worked, then next year it's just going to be a bigger bonus eye, that kind of a thing. I mean, it will break down, and probably things break down, surely, down to terrible things, like, an invoice wasn't right, or something stupid like that, you know, or, you know, somebody's sick on the marketing director, or things like that, you know, it's just stuff like that that are, like, you know, really little tiny annoying things, but they do actually, you know, escalate.
Yeah. But the other thing that happens as well, Colin, though, is that, like, when sponsors do get tired and they do get jaded on an event and they didn't move on, there's no way of preventing that.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Between the management, you've got, what, 3 or 4 different things going on at any one time, and, you know, like, hedges your bets, and it's really interesting, and you can apply kind of this or whatever that, and, you know, that's where, you know, I think any brand will be part of the control, and we don't want to see the same thing over and over and over, so, you know, keep it, you know, fresh.
I wonder if you've got to kind of stick it around, if the event kind of, if it goes beyond what you thought it was going to be, or let's say that the calm is a different thing, what you expected, then you need to be conversational with them. Is that, and if they need more presence on the event, and they try to do that in, or, you know, if the trust gets broken, then that's a open deal.
Thank you all very much for coming out tonight. Thanks very much to Simon on sound, to John on for sorting out the door as well. And thanks very much to Eventbrite for hosting this conversation. I'd like to say a big thanks to Anya, to Sam, and to Colin. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Colin, Olney and Sam for their time and contributions, and thanks to Anne Lowney at Eventbrite, John Mann at The Locals, and all at Teens Whiskey for their help with this event. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news where we're up to at Banter, plus you can also listen back to all the Banter podcasts to date. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.